You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
It's O-Behave with Arden Moore, the show that teaches you how to have harmony in the household with your pets. Join Arden as she travels coast to coast to help millions better understand why cats and dogs do what they do. Get the latest scoop on famous faces, their perfectly pampered pets, and who's walking who in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails, garner great pet tips, and have a doggone fur-flying fun time. So get ready for the pause and applause as we unleash your O-Behave host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome to the O-Behave Show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. Do you love your mutt, but just a little curious as to what she is? Well, thanks to a new DNA test, you can take the mystery out of your mutt and pinpoint her true identity. That's what I did with my little dog, Cleo, whom I was positive was a Bichon, Maltese, Poodle, Mediterranean mix. But I was wrong. Later in the show, I will reveal Cleo's true identity, and the results truly were surprising. Here to unravel Cleo's true DNA is our special guest, Dr. Angela Hughes, a veterinary geneticist who can discuss a special DNA test from Mars Veterinary called the Wisdom Panel. Welcome to the show, Dr. Hughes.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So if you have what I affectionately refer to as a who's your mama, who's your daddy dog, sit and stay for this special show. We're planning to offer free DNA tests for a couple of lucky listeners, so you'd need to tune in. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Time for a pause. Four furry ones, actually. Sit and stay. O-Behave will be right back.
Spills, pet messes, and dirt are unavoidable, but the stains and odors they cause are not. Spot Shot Instant Carpet Stain and Odor Eliminator is non-toxic, environmentally friendly, and biodegradable formula. Safely and permanently eliminates the toughest carpet spills and stains, even pet messes. Approved by the Carpet and Rug Institute, Spot Shot neutralizes odors with powerful dual odor eliminators and utilizes an anti-resoiling agent to protect carpets from future stains. Spot Shot products can be found at Walmart, Petco, Lowe's, and your local grocery retailer. For more information, visit spotshot.com. Get $5 off the admission for the hit movie, Marley and Me. Just go to the O-Behave Show on PetLifeRadio.com and click on the Marley and Me banner for details.
New York, the glitz, the glamour, the exciting Muttropolis, the sparkling kitty city that never sleeps. Join us each week for Pets in the City with your host, Diane West. Celebrity pet sightings, hot events, and news and reviews with the hottest movers, shakers, and tail waggers in New York. So take a bite out of the Big Apple with Pets in the City every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. O-Behave is back with more tail-wagging ways to achieve harmony in the household with your pets. Now, back to your fetching host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome back to the O-Behave Show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. We're going a little CSI on this episode to help you discover who your dog really is. The latest tool in spotlighting your dog's true identity is a DNA test. And here to explain this test and explain why knowing what breeds are in your dog are important to your dog's health is our special guest, Dr. Angela Hughes, a veterinary geneticist. Welcome to the O-Behave Show, Dr. Hughes.
Thank you for having me so much.
Yeah, it's nice to have a doctor on in the house, especially one that can tell us what our mutts are. So let's get right into it. And you know what? People love saying, I have a mutt. But why do you think now, these days, is it important to really know what's in your mutt?
Well, for many, many years, veterinary medicine has evolved and veterinary research has evolved where we've learned a lot about our purebred dogs, the diseases that they can carry, the nutritional needs, their behaviors, their temperaments, what it is it takes to train a dog of one breed versus another. But what we've, you know, really been lacking is in information about our mixed breed dogs. So what we've decided to do is learn more about the components of our mixed breed dog to really glean from this wealth of information we have about purebred dogs to bring it into a more unique set of information for each individual mixed breed dog.
So I understand you got involved in this testing for Mars Veterinary with the Wisdom Panel. There's a little connection with your dog. Is it Rimsky?
Rimsky, yes.
Yeah, tell us the Rimsky story.
Well, Rimsky was a dog in the Sacramento County Shelter here in California when I was in vet school, and he joined our canine medicine shelter dog rescue project. So what we did was each quarter we selected a number of dogs out of the shelter that we felt, you know, may not get adopted but would make good adoptable dogs with a little help and training. And mm-hmm. we placed these dogs with foster families and gave weekly training sessions to help them learn basic training and obedience, as well as deal with any medical problems that they had, if they needed to be spayed or neutered, if they needed to be put on heartworm or flea medication, that sort of thing. So we basically got them into a good, healthy shape with basic obedience training in these foster homes. And then the fosters had the choice of adopting them or of putting them up for adoption, and we got them good homes. Well, Rimsky came into that program, and his foster mom went in just knowing she wanted to foster a dog, didn't want to adopt him from the get-go because she already had a number of pets in her household. So this was just going to be a project she wanted to do. And uh-huh. Rimsky basically found a place in my heart, and I decided he had to be mine. So aww. It was unexpected, but as many of us know, they often find us rather than us finding them. So I adopted him, close on 9 years ago, mm-hmm. Last month. So I've had him for many, many years, and being a veterinarian and interested in genetics, I certainly have had my thoughts on what his breed composition was and that sort of thing. And basically, he looks like an overgrown Papillon. He looks like about a 20-pound Papillon, but the Deveres don't stand up. That's about the only thing that gives him away. And okay. That's what I always called him. And he had some, you know, he likes to, you know, herd people and nip at heels and that sort of thing. So, well, maybe some Border Collie in there or something like that. Cocker flitted past my brain once or twice, but not a big thing. And it wasn't until last spring when I had him tested that I found out what truly makes him up. And it turns out that he has, he doesn't have any purebred parents, so no significant breeds in him. But at the intermediate or approximately grandparent level, he has Cocker Spaniel and Maltese.
Okay.
And when you think about it, it made a whole lot of sense. He has, you know, very a large number of the Cocker Spaniel behavioral traits, and I read that and went, oh my goodness, it's my dog. And
give me a specific. What do you mean? Give me some of those traits that you saw in Rimsky.
He's a little standoffish with other dogs and with strangers and such like that, but mm-hmm. warms up quickly. Things like that, where just kind of how he generally appears to the world. Like he's. Some of it's going to be colored, so to speak, by his 6 months of life on the streets or wherever he was before he fell into my hands. But certainly he's always had a little bit of a skittish streak with regard to new dogs and new people. He's always, we've called him, you know, he has little man complex where the best defense is a strong offense. So,
oh, yeah.
Well, he's
the bluff bark, is that what you call it?
He will, you know, go down barking and die trying, but... needless to say, he has his issues, and so we can't go to places like dog parks and such. So you just learn to work around them. But now I have a better understanding of why he acts like that. It's not that he's a mean Papillon per se. He's just a Cocker Spaniel that has some of those traits that come out, and you have to learn to work with them and realize that, you know, it's not your dog's fault. It's just the ingrained behaviors, and they were trained to do a certain job, and sometimes those behaviors come out in different ways. His Maltese comes out in his very fine hairs, but unfortunately he didn't inherit the non-shedding gene, so he sheds little white hairs all over all of my clothes, specifically if you're wearing black. He really likes to be in your lap if you're wearing black.
I think that's kind of canine humor. I think they get together and go, really?
That's how they get back at you.
what your people wearing today? Okay, all right. Hide the vacuum cleaner. Hide those rollers. We're going to have a party.
Absolutely, absolutely. He loves to leave hairs everywhere. In fact, you can pull something out of the dryer and there will already be hairs on it. And we're like, how does that work? As far as medically goes, he's largely been a healthy dog, thankfully. But he did start having seizures a few years ago that at first I didn't realize that's what he was having. He was scratching at his face and his neck region, and I thought he was choking. So we checked him out for a foreign body or something stuck in his windpipe or something like that and didn't find anything and were very perplexed. And it wasn't until about 6 months later when he had a full body seizure that we realized that first one was probably a focal facial seizure.
Oh, yeah.
And he has since developed epilepsy. And so while we're still learning a lot more about the genetics of a lot of the diseases that we see in dogs and what can and cannot be, you know, common in mixed breed dogs versus purebred dogs, it is interesting to note that Cocker Spaniels do have a inherited form of epilepsy. And so it's possible that that's what Rimsky's epilepsy is due to or not. But needless to say, if I had known his breed composition at that time, it might have given me, you know, pause to think about, you know, maybe it's epilepsy or some kind of seizure as opposed to just a choking event that it didn't turn out to be.
Well, I think that's very important. Yeah, no, information is power, you know, and I think is what we're trying to say is it's fun to know what our dog is, but as you've touched upon, it seems like this wisdom panel test, and there are, to be candid, other tests coming out or available too. Mm-hmm. It's helping you be able to pinpoint maybe if your dog is more prone to something. I'm thinking of, I have a good friend that has the Cavalier, and the Cavalier, it's my understanding, has more of a genetic propensity for HCM, you know, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, and I will not say that 10 times fast. But tell me, I mean, give me a couple of breeds that may have some sort of genetic risk for a health and why working with your veterinarian and knowing who your daddy, who your mama dog really is going to help you in maybe preventing or at least treating or slowing down some of these genetic conditions.
Absolutely. Well, it kind of falls into various classes. So it depends on the disease in question and how that disease is inherited. So in our mixed breed dogs, the two kind of main things that we worry about are polygenic diseases, meaning there's multiple genes involved, and if those genes kind of combine in the right way, you get the disease. So, for instance, hip dysplasia is a classic polygenic disease, lots of genes involved. We don't know how exactly it's inherited beyond that. We don't know what are the genes involved. We don't know if there's 15 of them, and if you got 5 of them, then you have the disease, or if you get the right, you know, set of those 15 or what have you. But needless to say, it is a disease that we do see frequently in a number of purebred dogs, by and large the large and giant breed dogs, but certainly some of our smaller dogs as well.
Let me touch on that one before you go to the second one. So polygenetic diseases, in essence, it's kind of like how the genes are sort of tossed in a blender and how
right.
they come out is whether or not
exactly.
dog may or may not have that. But large mm-hmm. breeds tend to be a little bit more suspect for it?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
And I'm going to throw one more big word at you.
Okay.
Multifactorial.
I love this.
Multifactorial is a word that means that there's a combination of genes and environment. And
again,
this is another problem with hip dysplasia. Well, it can be a good thing, too, where environment does play a significant role. So if you found that your dog was predisposed to hip dysplasia because it was a German Shepherd or a Labrador, or it was a mixed breed dog that contained some of those breeds, it would definitely behoove you to work on making the environment as optimal for that dog as possible to limit progression of the disease. So how do you change their environment? Well, you work on limiting food so that they aren't overweight.
Mm-hmm.
The more weight on the dog's joints, the harder it is for them, and the more they break down and cause more disease down the line.
Okay.
And secondly, exercise. So you want good exercise because you want your dog to maintain a good lean body weight and also to maintain just joint laxity and lube and all of that sort of thing so that they, you know, can still move and not creak and all that sort of thing like we do when we get older. But
Well, speak for yourself.
Low impact. Yeah, exactly. It's also good for you. But you want low impact exercise. So you don't want them, you know, hitting the ground really hard, or, you know, jumping off of high places or jumping into, you know, you want low impact exercise. So gentle running, swimming is fabulous. You know, things like that. Work to encourage that sort of thing in your dog.
Not going after going off a platform to catch a Frisbee, right?
Right, exactly. Not going from 0 to 60 in 2 feet, you know, sort of thing.
All right, that's very important.
So that's kind of the first class of diseases. The second class of diseases would be diseases that have an impact if you only have one copy of the gene, so dominant or semi-dominant diseases. And diseases that fall into this class are some of the eye diseases that we see in dogs, as well as there's a mutation in a gene called MDR1, or multi-drug resistance.
Slow down here. A mutation in the gene.
MDR1. MDR1.
Okay.
So it stands for multi-drug resistance.
Okay.
And what this is it's a receptor in the brain that helps regulate levels of bad things in the brain. So if you're exposed to certain toxins in your environment, this is an ancient receptor that we've had for thousands and thousands of years, created basically to pump toxins out of your brain. So if you're exposed to them, you ingest them or whatever, they'll filter into your brain through your bloodstream, but your brain goes, oh, we don't want this up here, and pumps it out. Some of the drugs that we use these days that use this receptor are chemotherapeutics, the chemotherapies that we use to treat cancer and such like that. But there are also a number of other drugs that come from natural origins, so from plant-based products and things like that, that our body has over the millennia developed a resistance to. Well, we now use them specifically to target certain diseases and such. So what happens if you have a mutation in this receptor, your brain can't pump this toxin out properly.
Oh.
So it builds up in your brain, and so you can have effects from that. One of the classic drugs that causes a problem with this that we use frequently in veterinary medicine is called ivermectin. Mm-hmm. So this is also referred to as ivermectin sensitivity. If you have a mutation in this receptor, you can't pump the ivermectin out of your brain. So even if you give the dog a normal dose of ivermectin to treat it for mites and things like that, the dog can't handle it because their brain can't pump it out properly and deal with it normally. So even one copy of this mutated gene can cause problems in some dogs. Two copies of the mutated gene is pretty rare, but it does happen, particularly in certain breeds, collies and things like that. And they really have trouble. They have way more trouble than a normal dog would with chemotherapeutics, with ivermectin, things like that. So it's very important to know if your dog may have a problem with this, because it might change how your veterinarian treats that dog. So our test at this point in time would give you some indication as to whether there's a breed in your dog's history that would be predisposed to this problem. And if that was the case, you might consider going and having additional testing done to find out if they have this MDR1 mutation. And that could alter, like I said, how your veterinarian treats your dog over the life of your dog.
Wow, that's very important. We're speaking to Dr. Angela Hughes. She's a veterinary geneticist, and she's helping us explain a new type of mixed breed analysis. It's called Wisdom Panel. It's from Mars Veterinary, and you're going to be able to find out how you can maybe win a free testing by listening to the show. And at the end, we're going to give all the details. We're going to take a commercial break and come back and reveal Cleo's true identity and discuss more about this fascinating world of DNA with Dr. Angela Hughes right after we pay for the show. So stick around.
Time for a pause. Four furry ones actually sit and stay. All Behave will be right back.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at petplanetmagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pet Life Radio proudly presents DSPN, the Dog Sports and Performance Network. Get ready to unleash the dog sports enthusiast in all of us. From speed drawing and mushing to racing, agility, and competition, this is the place to learn all about the dog sports and activities that you can do with your furry best friend and canine competitor. So get ready for game time. DSPN with your host, Lori Williams. Every week, on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. All Behave is back with more tail wagging ways to achieve harmony in the household with your pets. Now back to your fetching host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome back to the O Behave Show. I'm your host, Arden Moore. We're talking with Angela Hughes. She's a veterinary geneticist, and she's pretty amazing. She can talk really fast and actually say a lot, and I love it because I'm busy taking down notes, Dr. Hughes, because that's what I do. I spent 20 years as a newspaper reporter, so a pen in my hand seems to be just like genetically predisposed for me, I guess. Maybe Gutenberg was my great-great relative. Who knows?
There you go.
But, you know, I wanted to explain to you how we sort of crossed paths is that I was contacted by Mars Veterinary to say, hey, we want you to take one of these mixed breed tests for your dog, Cleo. I have two dogs. One is a 60-pounder named Chipper, and apparently they were able to pinpoint her background as a golden retriever husky mix, and my vacuum cleaner can definitely attest that she is a golden retriever husky, just like you said with your dog, Rimsky, you know, hair everywhere. But yep. Cleo came into my life a couple years ago from the streets, and I thought, oh my gosh, what kind of dog is she? And everybody, you know, you do the little poll around with your friends. What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? And the best guess was she had a Bichon, Maltese, Terrier, Poodle, you know, we're all just guessing. So for the past 2 years, I've affectionately called her my mystery mutt. Well, when Mars Veterinary contacted me to do the panel, I said, hey, let's find out. So here's how I was told how it works. You get the kit. It comes in the mail. It's very easy. It isn't very hard to do. Don't worry. It's almost as easy as putting in a light bulb, so we can all do it. But the second part of the test is you need to go to your veterinarian and get a little blood sample from your dog, and they have all the little packaging that you can mail off this sample to the folks at Mars Veterinary, and they analyze it, and you get back a pretty neat little report card on your dog that goes and explains what your dog is and why, but they also give you a lot of background information on how the test is conducted and the importance of why you should know for both medical and behavioral trait reasons who your dog truly is. So I told you, I warned you earlier, Dr. Hughes, that I actually created a jingle for Cleo to reveal her identity. So just close your ears. You can howl a bit if you want, but okay, here goes. And Cleo is this. Ready? What type of dog is my Cleo? A sweet mutt of breed mystery. It took a DNA test, you see, to find out her true identity. I'm happy to share what we found. Cleo's a miniature poodle with a dash of basset hound. Are you still
nicely
alive?
Nicely done.
Okay. There is no way I thought a basset hound, my dog, and as you will see when we post this show on the Pet Life Radio site, we're going to do a picture of a miniature poodle with a plus sign, with a basset hound, with an equal sign, with the photo of Cleo, who I now call her Royal Houndness. I go around the house going, is there a hound in the house? She's a little 12-pounder, but this is a perfect one to try to explain to people who may be surprised by what is found in the blood test. So the good doctor, Angela Hughes, is going to help us sort of explain the surprise and why maybe, could you go into maybe why the blood test might be as good or equally better than, say, a swab, cheek swab test? So I'm kind of curious. Let's use Cleo as an example why I'm stunned that she's got Basset Hound in her. But let's go through it because we talked a little bit about her case.
Well, with Cleo, she's got a couple of traits that we can definitely see going on. She's got the kind of wavy hair, so she's not the super tight curl of a poodle. She's got more of a wave to her hair. And what we know about with breeding studies is that super tight curl, when you cross that to another non-curly breed, that first generation gets more of a wave. So they have one copy of the curl gene as opposed to two copies like the poodles have. And we haven't found the gene yet that's responsible for that, but we found that one copy gives a wave and two copies gives a tight curl. Managed to inherit that gene for the curl down a couple generations from her poodle ancestor. Also, she has the what we call fawn or yellow gene, and that gene is a recessive gene, so she has to have two copies of that to show yellow in her hair coat. And obviously, she can get that from the poodle, from like an apricot-colored poodle. So this gene is responsible for everything from a very light cream color yellow to a very deep red. We think there's probably modifier genes involved that make it anywhere from that light to the dark color. But the basic main gene that's responsible is this one gene that like I said, has to be recessive. So she has to have two copies of that. In addition to that, she also carries the black gene, and I can tell that because her nose is black and her eye rims are black, and probably the pads on her feet. So that gene is actually dominant in most dogs, and is coming through. So she has at least one copy of that black gene. I don't know if she has two or not, but because it's dominant, she has to have at least one. And those are the main ones. As far as size goes, there's probably only a handful of genes involved in size, so a fairly small number. And depending on which breed she got those genes from, as far as size goes, that's who's going to indicate size. So while she has a larger dog, a Basset Hound, somewhere in the 40 to 60-pound range in her background, she may not have inherited the size genes from that dog. She may have gotten them more from the poodle, the miniature poodle, or some other ancestors to make her on the smaller side.
Okay. All right.
The other interesting thing to note is if she had the short little twisted legs like you'd expect of a Basset Hound or a Dachshund, you would totally say, of course she's got Basset or Dachshund or what have you in her. But that is, again, a single gene that causes that in the Bassets and the Dachshunds. And like the curl gene, they appear to have two copies of it. So their first generation will still show kind of short and twisted legs, not quite as short and twisted as their original Basset or Dachshund ancestor, but they still are short and twisted. Well, the second generation, when that dog breeds to a long-legged dog, 50% of the puppies would have short twisted legs because they'd inherited that gene. The other 50% would have long normal legs.
Yeah, she's not totally long like a poodle, but they're not corgi size either. So you're right.
Exactly.
I was looking at that. But she does like to sniff around a lot. She's quite the sniffer, so I don't know if...
So that's maybe her hound genes coming out in her behavior.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know too many miniature poodles that could, you know, lower themselves to actually sniff the ground.
No, she's quite the sniffer, you know. And she's a fan of Elvis Presley, too, so I think she's got the hound lover in her. I don't know. Maybe when I play Elvis Presley, she gets all giddy and everything and dances. There may be something there. But behavioral-wise, too, what would you be seeing in this panel result?
It's hard to say, you know, from a picture. If I knew Cleo, I could probably start picking some stuff out. And like I said with Rimsky, some of his characteristics, behaviorally, most of his characteristics seem to have come from the Cocker Spaniel, although he does like to be a lap dog.
Yeah. Well, we call her Torpedo Tongue. That's how she greets people. And she does, like your dog, Rimsky, does that little bark bluff, you know, when a dog comes to her at the dog park, like, and then she wants to be their friend. She wants to sniff, but it says, excuse me, who said you could come to the back end to say hi to me? There's no canine handling going on. But then once she meets them, she loves big dogs. She really loves big dogs, and obviously I have a 60-pounder. So we have a neighbor who has a dog named Stella, who's a pit bull boxer mix. Oh, my gosh, Cleo does that little monkey mouth when she sees Stella, and they play, and it's just, it's kind of funny. She's pretty savvy. But as you have mentioned, the environment should never be discounted in what your dog becomes, because just like us, what our experiences are do help shape who we become, correct?
Correct, absolutely.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the wisdom panel. I know there are tests out there that do different ways of trying to determine the breed. This one seems to go with the blood route, and there's others that do the cheek swab. So can you, as a veterinary geneticist, sort of give us a little explanation on these two different ways of trying to find out what your doggy is?
Right. So we're all ultimately trying to come at the same thing. I can't speak as to how the other companies do it in terms of their procedure, because that is proprietary information and they have not released that. But I can certainly talk about differences and similarities between blood and swab DNA, as well as how the Mars veterinary product works in terms of determining the breeds involved. So what this blood draw does is, obviously, it collects a small blood sample, and from that we actually select the white blood cells to give us the DNA. So red blood cells actually do not contain any DNA, at least nuclear DNA, which is what we're looking at. They don't have a nucleus in them, and so they don't contain DNA in mammals. Birds are different. Birds are special, and they have nucleated red cells with DNA in them. But for our purposes, we use the white blood cells. Debated certainly whether to use a swab test versus a blood test, and decided to go with the best possible source of DNA, which is blood. It's the least likely to be contaminated, and is a very good source of high quality pure DNA from just that individual. Swabs are collected by rubbing a small brush against your dog's gums and cheek, and they pick up cells that slough off or come off of the cheek or the gum. And unfortunately, a lot of that is going to be user-dependent. How, you know, rigorously did you scrub your dog's gums to collect a sample? So if you just collect some saliva, you didn't get very many cells, and you're not going to get a good DNA sample from that. The cheek and the mouth is going to be potentially contaminated with bacteria and food, both of which contain DNA. So that can lead to difficulties in analysis. So we've chosen to go with the best possible source of DNA, the purest, best quantity of DNA, which requires the blood draw. But we also don't have issues usually with having to retest a dog because of lack of enough DNA. So we found that our source works very well and, like I said, results in almost no retests. I've heard through the grapevine that the swab test oftentimes you have to have, you know, re-samples done, new samples taken, because they didn't get enough cheek cells to begin with.
This is fascinating, but what I want to just stop and tell you is that it sounds to me that, yeah, it's an extra step in the front end, but in the end, it sounds like you're going to get a more precise result. That if I would have, you know, because, you know, owner compliance is a big deal. What if I didn't get directly the right, or I just gave her a big meaty treat before and had cow in it and said that she turned out to be, you know, part bison or something.
Wolfie.
I don't know.
Exactly.
Cleo, you're a bull, which is also, you know, gender-wise not possible. But I guess but the point is, blood doesn't lie.
Right, exactly. Okay. The one time that we have had an issue was a dog that received a blood transfusion within a couple of days of testing, and that definitely raised a few eyebrows. It's like, wow, we hadn't even thought about that being an issue, but it's true. That's about the only time we'd have to worry about a blood contamination issue. Then what we do with the blood sample is it gets mailed to our laboratory, and there the DNA, like I said, is extracted from the white blood cells, run against the over 300 markers, DNA markers that we utilize in our test, and then that data actually gets sent to our computer, and the computer analyzes the data by breaking down the data into various family trees. So it looks at Cleo first and says, all right, if Cleo were only going to be one thing, what would she best match? Out of the 157 breeds that we have in our test, as well as the three ancestral dog groups, and those consist of the European group, which are the hounds, terriers, retrievers, and herding breeds.
Wait a minute. They consist of the hounds, the terriers, the retrievers, and who?
The herding breeds.
That's the European group?
That's the European group. The second one is the guard group, or breeds meant to guard us, such as bulldogs, boxers, mastiffs, American Staffordshire Terriers, etc. The third one is the ancient group, or the Asian breeds, which are the chows, sharpeys, Shiba Inus, breeds like the huskies, Siberian huskies, and the Alaskan malamutes and such. The computer has signatures for 157 breeds and these three ancestral dog groups. And so, like I said, it looks at Cleo as a whole and says, what would Cleo best match if she was only one thing? Then if I had two things coming together, so one from Cleo's mom and one from her dad, what would she best match? And then if there were three breeds involved and four breeds. So it builds all these pedigree trees from a very simple one or two breeds involved up to a very complicated tree with up to eight great-grandparent breeds coming together.
Wow.
And it gives a statistical score as to how well each of those trees matches to Cleo's actual data, and the one with the best match is the one selected and sent out to you.
So we found out
that Cleo's miniature poodle in Basset.
But she's much more miniature poodle. You were saying before, let's go through that, because of the special coding that people, when they do this test, they can be able to find out that she does have a dash of Basset Hound. So my song was correct, right?
You are correct, yes.
Okay.
So what we're finding is that Cleo doesn't have a match to one breed that is large enough to say she had a parent. So she does not have any breeds at the significant level, meaning she doesn't have a breed that's 50% or more of her DNA.
Okay.
She has the miniature poodle at the intermediate level, which is the equivalent of 25% or more of her DNA, so approximately a grandparent contribution. And then she has the Basset Hound at the lowest level, or what we call trace, which is the equivalent of our, you know, three generations back great-grandparent contribution.
She's an all-American mutt.
She's an all-American mutt, plus other things that are, you know, mixed beyond three generations. So she has obviously other purebred dogs, but further back than three generations. Her ancestors have been around her block, so to speak.
That's okay. Well, that's another point, I guess, to point out to our folks. And when you do this test, you may get an all-American mutt, and it may be trace elements. So this test is very handy, but it, like you said, you don't know what they've been mixing and mingling, and you really may have a blender dog, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And unfortunately, it's hard to know before you test a dog which dogs are going to give a result with a significant breed or a lot of breeds involved, and another dog that, you know, is going to only find bits and pieces because their other ancestors are so mixed, it's impossible for us to find matches to them.
We're very delighted to have Dr. Angela Hughes on our show. She's a veterinary geneticist, and she's here to explain the Mars Veterinary's DNA test. It's called the Wisdom Panel. And for folks who are anxious and have been listening very patiently on how they can maybe win a free panel, it's easy. We're going to post the show on the PetLifeRadio.com website. And the first two people who email me, and you please, please, please have a really mixed mutt. Don't be sending me your corgis or your beagles, because we'll know that. Send an email to arden@ardenmoore.com. That's arden@ardenmoore.com. And put in the subject header the DNA mutt test. And the first two emails I get, we will send them off to Mars Veterinary, and they will contact you and send you the kit. And we want to have you on our show. And we're hopefully Dr. Hughes will be back on too, and we can explain the results of those tests. So I think the tests serve a lot of good purposes. It's very important to know your dog's identity for both genetic related diseases, like you were mentioning, Dr. Hughes, with eye diseases, and you know, there's dogs that have heart conditions. Knowing what your dog is made up of makes it a better way of being able to work with your veterinarian to pick the right foods, to pick the right types of exercise, to really keep tabs on things so you can have your dog for a long, healthier life. Right, doctor?
Correct.
Absolutely. All right, that's our goal, right? I want Cleo to be Methuselah, you know, that's my goal. So,
my dog that they're not allowed to die.
There you go, that's right. Now, you can learn more about this Wisdom Panel. It's very easy. You just go to wisdompanel.com on the website, and you can noodle around it and find out how this DNA test really works. I'm personally a mutt. I'm glad I'm a mutt. Cleo's a mutt. You know, I've had purebred dogs in the past. And it was very nice of you to share your story about Rimsky. Rimsky is one lucky mutt to be with you, Dr. Hughes.
Yes, he is. I think he's currently lounging on my couch.
Well, that's our show for today. I also want to take this time to thank my cool producer, Mark Winter. He makes this show happen every week. I want you to keep tuning in. Tell your friends. Go tell your friends about this DNA test. It's really not that expensive. The price does range based on where you live a little bit. The blood test for me to go have it done at my veterinary clinic was $15. That's not that much. But you can learn more by going to wisdompanel.com. So, until next time, this is your flea-free host, Arden Moore, delivering just two words to all you two, three, and four-leggers out there. Oh, behave!
Coast to coast and around the world, it's Oh, Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do, and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. All Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand. This is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.